Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the AnimeBuoy.org Anime Fan Podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussion that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is October 18th, 2015, and this is Episode 4, Vampire Hunter D. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to the Anime Buoy Recommendation and Discussion Podcast, where we talk about our favorite anime and hope to open your eyes to some classics that you might have missed and shine a light on some modern shows that maybe just aren't getting as much love as we think maybe they should be. This week, we're talking about the Vampire Hunter D franchise. So, let's tear into that a little bit. Slaggy?
Don't you mean let's take a bite out of that?
I wish I had. Well done. Why don't you kick things off here, Slaggy? My understanding is you saw this for the first time somewhat recently. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this film? It came from the 1985 anime scene, was released in Japan originally as a direct-to-video animation OVA original video animation. It's often thought of as like a theatrical film due to, just the way anime was presented back then. But why don't you tell us a little bit about your your opinion on this piece?
Yeah, I mean, I had realized that I hadn't actually never seen it until very recently. It's considering, what the state of anime was in the 80s, practically unknown in the Western world, aside from, Speed Racer and stuff like that. But, definitely did not have, the sort of following that we think of anime having now. From what I know about, the anime scene was, that, it seems pretty groundbreaking just because of the, very serious content. It's very bloody in parts, it's not meant, for children or, super cutesy or anything. It's very
well, it was marketed back then as the first animated horror film for adults.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was targeted for that demographic, definitely. And a movie or an OVA that's 30 years old, it holds up really well, I think. Some parts are a little bit cheesy, but I think that the character of D is definitely, really, a type, kind of an archetype that people enjoy, kind of like the anti-hero, bounty hunter, kind of silent.
Absolutely. Type. And, within the anime space, Vampire Hunter D was very much like a trope codifier. A lot of the things that we think of as anime tropes really originated from, this era, and at least as far as the Western perception of them, this was sort of like a definer in many ways of that sort of archetypal anime dark hero comes in, single man with a sword, takes down, the whole room of villains with just a couple of, really cool flashy slashes.
Thanks, Kenshin.
Right. Vampire Hunter D, like we said, comes from 1985, and this was actually directed by Toyo Ashida-san. You might be familiar with his works as a director. He directed the Fist of the North Star series back in the 80s. He did direction work on Mysterious Cities of Gold, which, very popular outside of Japan. He did some work on one of the Dr. Slump movies, but he's also actually done character design, and he's actually done a lot of character design. Vampire Hunter D... this character design was originally done by Yoshitaka Amano-san.
Yes.
You're probably familiar with his works from the Final Fantasy games. He did all of the art pieces for the novel series that Vampire Hunter D is based on, which obviously is also called Vampire Hunter D. And Ashida-san actually contributed his own character designs to Vampire Hunter D, and then the animation staff actually combined the best elements of the two different sets of character designs.
Yeah, that's something that I thought was really interesting, looking at this and knowing that Amano-san had been involved in it. I was like, oh, it doesn't look exactly, what an animated Yoshitaka Amano painting would look like. Of course, that would probably be, the most beautiful thing ever made, but...
Well, you know, there was the second Vampire Hunter D movie that came a lot closer with regard to that.
But
we'll talk about that in a few minutes. I just want to talk a little bit about Ashida-san's work as a character designer, because you're probably familiar with a lot of this stuff. He did character design work and key animation work for Inuyasha. That was a big one. A lot of our listeners are probably familiar with. He also did that similar kind of work on the Dr. Slump TV series, as well as the Cyborg 009 series, Space Battleship Yamato TV series from 74 to 81.
Toriyama-san, wasn't he?
With you know, a couple of the greats. Akira Toriyama, of course, also Leiji Matsumoto-san. So really, like, you know, this is a very connected man, did a lot of really great work, and came together to direct, you know, this film. Well, OVA, but again, we talk about it in the context of a film, and you know, is actually very specifically in Japan targeted explicitly at like male teen, male adult audiences.
And I can see that, yeah.
Which even in the mid 80s was not entirely common. So this was kind of considered a groundbreaking production, even in Japan. You know, it took a lot of its influences from the British film studio Hammer Productions. You're probably, if you're a film buff, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're not, you might want to go check out some of their films from like the late 50s, Curse of Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy. But these are British. But these are British productions, not like the Universal productions. So they're just really weird, cool stuff. Very kind of left of center at this point, but definitely worth checking out. And Ashida-san, you know, he had stated that his goal was to create this OVA production that people who were living like very tired, like stressful, like studying and working lives would enjoy, something that people would get a thrill out of, rather than something that, you know, people were going to sit down and philosophize over and, you know, end up feeling more worn out than when they started. And, you know, I think that this has actually worked really well. I think that, you know, this movie is well regarded all over the world for, you know, the fact that it's really cool. The premise is that you have, you know, this vampire hunter character. He's sort of like a wandering samurai sort. Everything is sort of post-apocalyptic in this setting, a little bit of a, almost like a spaghetti western post-apocalyptic feel. You know, think something like Cowboy Bebop meets the Omega Man. And, you know,
or Trigun meets Hellsing.
Trigun meets Hellsing. Those are basically the same movie, though. So, I mean, that would, or basically the same shows, though. So that wouldn't be that different. Although, you know, both of those productions were Madhouse, right?
Yes.
So there is a connection there, I suppose. But again, we'll get to that. Anyway, D, you know, he's this wandering sort of bounty hunter, hunts vampires. You might have gotten that from the title. And he, you know, ends up coming to this girl who's being harassed by a vampire and basically sort of entangles himself in her life as he attempts to free her from the thrall of a vampire that is, you know, attempting to, what's the word, bewitch her?
Seduce her.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, it is actually.
Take her as his bride.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's very much a seduction. You know, it's very much sci-fi meets fantasy. I think that a lot of people these days really appreciate the melding of sci-fi and fantasy. A lot of the themes in this movie, as far as visuals, like the visual motifs, are things that have become more popular now. You know, space western sci-fi is a lot more popular now than it was in the 80s. So I definitely think that, you know, this is the kind of thing that is easier to appreciate now than maybe it was 30 years ago.
And even then, you know, mixing it with, like, the gothic themes and vampires and all of that, you know, and I mean, Bloodlust definitely took that a step further, I think, but, you know, I think that's also a really interesting melding, as you said, that, I mean, I think something maybe like Escaflowne maybe would be the closest we have to something like that, with, like, a fantasy and a sci-fi sort of melding.
Man, you want to bring Escaflowne up anytime you can. But, you know, I feel you,
just
though.
Just saying that, you know, this definitely opens some doors into, like, you know, what anime could do with genre bending and such.
And, you know, so I want to talk a little bit about some of the themes of the piece. It's something I really like to look at. And, you know, the story of Vampire Hunter D is very much one of sort of like family and, you know, the ties that bind. D himself has some reasons for hunting vampires. And, you know, they might not be what you would think at first blush, but, you know, I definitely feel like they created a really interesting backstory for this character. I think that when you look at Vampire Hunter D and you look at other works of Japanese vampire fiction, everything else sort of takes a cue from Vampire Hunter D.
Mm-hmm.
You look at stuff like Castlevania, even, I would say, owes a lot to Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, there are even the ways some things are framed in this animated movie that it's like you can very specifically tell, like, Castlevania endings have been inspired by this. The use of parallax scrolling for some of the backgrounds have been inspired by this. Like, some shots are straight up like, man, this shot has been aped in Castlevania multiple times. So, you know, it's a very cool movie. And, you know, one of the other themes, of course, is one of, you know, it sort of looks at romance and romance unrequited. And you see several different personality types dealing with, you know, when they confess their romantic interests and they're spurned. That happens in parallel to several different characters. Mm-hmm. And we see how different character types deal with these things. One person takes the rejection somewhat okay, but the others take them to varying degrees of creepy grossness.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something to look out for, keep an eye open for. Slaggy, you saw this recently, so let's start with you. What moments of the film stood out for you?
I mean, definitely when they were in the Count's castle. I mean, that's definitely, you know, I mean, like, you know, the climactic final battle was definitely, you know, worth the kind of build up. And, you know, there's like some kind of slower parts like, oh, there's like some sexy sirens that are like trying to drain Dee's life force. But,
it's very erotic. There's some nipple.
Yeah. And, you know, there were some things that struck me as a little problematic, but then I had to remember, you know, this was from 1985. And also, you know, just culturally, Japan and us in the United States are, you know, very different, you know, so just keeping that in mind. But I also really liked, you know, kind of the twist that came about with Lamika, the daughter of the Count.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They play a little bit with identity expectation there.
Yes.
And, you know, just sort of, you know, self-image and how our beliefs about ourselves really inspire how we view the world around us. I actually think that character arc, it is a little more developed in the novel that this movie is based on. One of the cool sidebars here about Vampire Hunter D, it's based on a series of novels, which last I checked in Japan were still going. There's, you know, like 30 of them or something at this point. The vast majority of them are available in English translated via Dark Horse Comics.
Mm.
You can get them at most bookstores for like $8.99 or something. And the ones I've read, I've read the first 7 or 8, and they're all really, you know, they're quite fun reads. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to get back to it, though.
Yeah. I also really, in a similar way, the character Ray, who has like a really interesting sort of story as well.
And so he's a mutant. And that's one of the things, you know, in this setting, because it's post-apocalyptic. There have been nuclear wars and stuff. People have popped up with special powers. We don't see a whole lot of them in this film, but the one we do see is Rei Ginsei, which in one of the earlier dubs was translated as like Roganzi or something. It was a mess.
Oh,
those early
no.
Streamlined dubs. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
I know, just similarly how his character arc comes about at the end, and you know, I definitely felt that was rewarding to see how his storyline kind of tied up.
Yeah. You know, I actually was gonna say, for my favorite scene in the movie is actually probably the last scene that he appears in. I think that it's, you know, the last scene that he appears in is very much setting the tone for the finale, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, there's some action and some violence, and it for me at least was sort of eye-opening. I first saw this movie, they had it at the local Blockbuster Video, and I saw it, I was probably 10 years old, 11 maybe, and it was really like sort of an eye-opening, like, wow, this is like a different class of anything I've really seen before. And, you know, I've talked about that here on the show, how, you know, around that time I saw this movie at Blockbuster, but that moment where that scene happens, and Magnus Lee has a scene with Rei Ginsei, and it's just like, this really for me set the tone of like, that was like a narrative leap that you would not have seen in the kind of animation that you would typically see on TV here in North America at the time. So
right.
It was definitely like sort of a paradigm shift for me, and it really shaped my expectations for years to come. So with that, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the music. And, you know, it was a big deal in the 80s that there was actually a well-liked pop song used for the ending theme of this movie. It was called Your Song. It was done by Tetsuya Komuro, which, you know, it was actually like a big deal. The song, as far as I know, was really well received in Japan, probably charted. And it was, it's a cool song. It sounds really dated at this point in the way that, you know, some of that older Japanese pop music does. But again, you know, in 1985, it was a hit single. Other than that, though, I have to say, I actually find the score somewhat unremarkable.
Yeah, it wasn't really that memorable to me either.
Which, you know, it's interesting because a lot of these OVAs now, and I guess this really sort of dates the piece a little bit, but in the modern age, you know, when an OVA is announced, one of the big deals is, like, who's scoring it. But to find information on who scored Vampire Hunter D, like, I had to actually, like, watch the Blu-ray and, like, pause the credits. Like, this is not a movie that people really talk about in terms of its music, which is interesting because it's just so different from how things are done in the modern age of anime.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, Saigi, what's your verdict? Is this one that you think our listeners should watch? It clearly is one I think they should, but...
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, especially for, you know, the historical significance of it, you know, just keeping that in mind. It is a 30-year-old film, and it's, you know, it's definitely not on, like, a Studio Ghibli level in terms of what they were doing in the 80s already, you know. But, you know, no, it's a good watch, and, you know, just kind of keeping, like I said, some of those things in mind. Some of the kind of problematic fan service-y things and, you know, just, you know, keeping those things in mind.
All right. Well, then I want to talk next about the sequel film. Well, I shouldn't say sequel, but the second Vampire Hunter D film. This is Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust. And this film was released in the year 2000. It was animated and produced by Studio Madhouse, who is a huge deal even in the modern age of anime, directed by Yoshiaki Kawajiri-san, who is over there at Madhouse. It's based on the third Vampire Hunter D novel, Demon Death Chase, which actually ties quite closely to a comment you made while watching this last night, Slidekick. And would you like to repeat that?
Yeah, in some ways it's kind of like a vampire gothic post-apocalyptic road movie. It's like Mad Max with vampires, kind of.
Okay, but I really need to hear you just make the comment you made last night.
What, that it was basically Mad Max Fury Road, but with vampires?
I believe the phrase you used was Mad Max Scurry Road.
Oh, yes, I said it was Mad Max Scurry Road.
So, let's see. Some of the work that you're probably familiar with coming out of Madhouse is, of course, Helsing, Beck, Mongolian Chop Squad, Black Lagoon, Paranoia Agent, and Perfect Blue, and Paprika, which we have talked about here. The current show, One Punch Man, which we're going to talk about a little bit toward the end of the show. Obviously, Ninja Scroll is a huge one for those of you who have been sort of a part of the anime scene for a long time. Trigun, Record of Lodoss War, Sakura Taisen TV series, the first season of Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Mahou Tsukaitai, the Final Fantasy VII Last Order animation that was like special feature on the release of Final Fantasy Advent Children. I mean, literally, we could do an episode. We could probably do literally 30 episodes just on things Madhouse has made right over the years. Madhouse is absolutely one of the modern day pillars of like high art in anime, and just, you know, pumps out a ton of amazing work.
Yeah, if you're like, wow, that animation's gorgeous, it was probably done by Madhouse.
Right? Cardcaptor Sakura, X, both the movie and the TV series, Tokyo Babylon, Chobits, Clamp in Wonderland, like, just so much. Yeah, they have done so much.
I always forget how much.
Death Note?
I was just going to say, I forget how much Clamp they've worked on.
Yeah, they've...
Titles.
Yeah, it's been... they've done a lot. Yoshiaki Kawajiri-san has specifically directed Wicked City, which was a huge one in the early days of anime in North America. He did work on The Animatrix. Ninja Scroll, obviously, was huge.
That's, like, kind of his big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The X TV series, and just a ton of movies. He did work on the original Gatchaman series, Barefoot Gen, Record of Lodoss War, Cardcaptor Sakura. He did work in North America on Todd McFarlane's adaptation of Spawn, the HBO animation series. So, again, just a real, like, A-list anime cast working on this Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust. And the interesting thing is that this movie was actually largely made with Western money, basically. It was actually Urban Vision, who I don't believe is around anymore, unfortunately. But they put a lot of money into this production. They worked really hard to get Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust made. They paid for a great deal of it. And interestingly, when it was originally released, there actually was not a Japanese voice track recorded, which is fairly interesting. The Japanese theatrical release actually screened in English, subtitled in Japanese, the way that is often treated for, like, English-made movies. But the thing I really want to get to here, and maybe Soggy will disagree, I like Vampire Hunter D, the original film, largely for reasons of what it is, for where it came from. It's good, but it's not really, like, what I would call next-level shit. Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust is a phenomenal film.
It was so good. Yeah.
The art is fantastic. The English voice acting, which, you know, sounds awful and I had attitude about when I first heard about it. And I actually have a little bit of an in here because I know a lot of people who worked on this film. That early late 90s, early 2000s, I was really involved in the anime scene as a part of a lot of different, like, fan sub circles. I went to all of the big cons, and I actually got to know a lot of people who worked on this film while it was being made. And while they were telling me about it, I had attitude, like, really? All the time. But in retrospect, man, Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust is so much better than the original.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal movie. Fantastic, beautiful visuals. The music and voice acting is fantastic. Once again, you know, the character designs were done by Yoshitaka Amano, and no one came in and did alternate designs this time, so the art really looks very true to what you would expect from Amano-san. There are a lot of shots that are framed very specifically, in fact, sort of the way you imagine Amano-san would have drawn these characters.
Yeah.
Lots of uses of silhouettes, a lot of, like, long flowing hair and capes and things. There's one shot in particular that they use in all the promo for the Western release of the film, of D himself on a horse in front of the moon.
Yeah.
And it's very striking. It's almost like, you know, this very much had to have been a piece that Amano did that they, like, translated into this movie. It's like, I'd like to hear from you, since you just saw this for the first time somewhat recently. What did you think of the film?
I loved it. I mean, I think that, you know, the pacing was a lot stronger than the original film. You know, I mean, I can't really talk about the animation quality because, you know, it's 15 years difference, so that's kind of a little bit unfair. But, you know, just
accurate.
Also,
although, again, it does need to be said, Bloodlust is a movie that looks beautiful in motion.
Yes,
but continue.
And like I said, I think even just, like, you know, the story, and, you know, there's really, because some of the original movie is, you know, a little cheesy, and, you know, there's, like, the children characters who are kind of like, dee, dee, who can kind of get a little bit grating. Whoa. But, you know, like, the character of Layla is amazing, you know, just in the way that her character arc develops, and, you know, and then kind of her her co-hunters that are with her. And it's also really interesting just the difference between D. He's a little bit colder than he was in the original film, so, which I think actually, for the way that the plot played out, you know, I actually think it served it really well. It's a very much, I was getting a lot of, like you said, not only, like, Mad Max Scurry Road, but also a lot more of, like, the Western motifs and stuff, you know. the original film was kind of more like, oh, like European villages and stuff, but there's definitely a lot of like kind of like Wild West sort of settings. They go into a town and where there's like a saloon and stuff, so you know, I really like that melding of the genres as well, you know, especially, you know, with the kind of the archetype that D is.
Excellent. So what kind of themes would you say are really looked at in this piece?
Well, again, family is really big, whether it's, you know, not to sound cheesy, but like your own family or the family that you make for yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a little bit more focus here also on sort of romance and, you know, the cost of romance, what it really means to care about someone and devote yourself to them. And I thought this movie actually had some interesting things to say on that count, as far as, you know, even in an ideal or less than ideal situation, really caring about someone and putting yourself out for them is a, you know, a dangerous thing that can come with some amount of, I don't want to say penalization, but it definitely has a cost, which was a little more than I thought, you know, you might expect from a genre piece like this. I also liked sort of a little bit of a look at legacies and what we leave behind after we've passed.
Yes.
Which, you know, is ripe ground for a vampire story, but not what you might expect from a vampire anime, really. If you're only going to watch one of these two movies, I would probably recommend that you only watch Bloodlust.
Yeah.
I think it has more to say, and I think it says it in a more interesting way, but I do think that both are absolutely worth watching.
Right, and you know, so, I could see where seeing Bloodlust without having seen the original, you're not missing, like, any huge backstory, aside from maybe one little hint at kind of D's family history.
But even that you could pick up from what's referenced in,
yes,
Bloodlust. So, Sagi, what particular moments or scenes stuck with you? What really popped for you?
Oh, man, just like every moment with Dee and Layla, basically.
And so Layla is a character. She's kind of a badass female protagonist. Carries a big gun. Is proficient at using it, because, you know, that can be a little bit of an issue. And she is actually on a different side than Dee initially. You know, they're both hunting vampires, but this other group, this mercenary group that Layla belongs to, they're oppositional to Dee, and in fact actually have combat sequences against him initially. And she sort of gets to know him and grows to have a camaraderie.
Yeah, they unwillingly help each other out, or maybe not so unwillingly, but kind of begrudgingly at first, but then it ends up being, you know, that they're allies in a way, really, at the end. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, friends. That last scene, without spoilers, like, I was having feelings. I was like, oh, when I realized, like, what the context was of that last scene.
Yeah, I actually thought that last sequence was really touching and really well done. I thought it was a beautiful ending to that film.
Everything in the castle I loved, again, the gothic castle.
And you know,
very,
it's
very Castlevania vibes from that one.
Oh, super Castlevania vibes. And you know, that castle, a lot of the animation they used as promo, some of the first stuff they produced was actually some of that castle stuff, and that's what they sold investors with, was that and sort of the first sequence of the movie with where they're doing that fly through the city and there's all the crosses.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the key, sort of key animation pieces that set the tone and mood for the movie. So I'm not surprised that castle sequence and the castle stuff really stuck with you.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of also was just kind of the twist with Meyer Link and Charlotte, who was, you know, she was abducted by this vampire baron who, you know, then what happens is that, you know, the father has hired Dee and then the Marcus brothers, which is the clan of
Bounty hunters,
thank you, to kind of be like, okay, whoever kills them first will get $200 million or whatever. But then, you know, things happen, and I'm just going to basically say, you know, when you really find out who the villain is, like, that, I thought that twist was really well done.
Well, and
it really plays with like the kind of traditional vampire tropes that you think of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, this movie, more than the first one, is more of like a gothic piece. Not just in terms of, oh, it's dark and spooky, but also that sense of a sort of gothic romance of darkness and tragedy and, you know,
gothic romance in the gothic castle.
You know, something I want to point out is that castle at the end, that is actually meant to be Elizabeth Báthory's castle.
Oh, really?
And, well, that is, you know, the Countess Carmilla from the novel Carmilla ages ago. It's a classic piece of literature. But, yeah, that's the Countess. So, in fact, the same character referenced in the current season of American Horror Story, the Countess.
Oh, yeah.
Referenced also in the Castlevania myth. She was in the spinoff that was done on the Genesis, Bloodlines, I think it was. So yeah, no, that's just one of those little notes and details that I really feel like the Vampire Hunter D movies do really well is sort of take like vampire literature, take characters from vampire literature and recontextualize them in new and interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
That ultimately, I think, serve the characters and serve the world and just come together really well. I think the world building in this second film in particular is fantastic. You know, we talked a little bit in the first film about how there were mutants with special powers. We do see people with powers in Bloodlust. The powers are all really interesting, really well realized, and some of my favorite scenes and what really sticks with me involve some of these powers, specifically their take on like the werewolf character I thought was fantastic. So just really cool stuff. I also want to talk a little bit about the music. I like the score of Vampire Hunter D a little bit, of Bloodlust a little better than the original. I still don't really think it was like a fantastic piece.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, there's musical motifs or themes that are, like, really memorable, you know?
Yeah. But I do want to call out, you know, they once again used a pop song. This one was Tokumare by Do As Infinity, which is obviously was huge in late 90s, early 2000s, J-pop and J-rock. And this was actually, like, one of their first huge singles in Japan. So definitely a fantastic song, one that I still listen to fairly often, removed from the context of the animation. And, you know, I just think it's a really great song, even if the rest of the score is pleasant but unmemorable.
Yeah.
So, overall, Slaggy, what did you think of Bloodlust overall?
I think it's great. I think it holds up really well today, and I can see why, you know, it had that Western involvement, because I think if it had been completely removed from Vampire Hunter D, the franchise, you know, the book series and everything, and it had just been, you know, If you had seen, like, a vampire post-apocalyptic film like that come out today in, you know, live action with Western actors, I think, like, it really the story and everything would really be appealing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit, very briefly, I want to sidebar to the Vampire Hunter D video game. This was a game for the PlayStation 1. It was released in Japan December 9th, 1999, and in North America September 25th, the year 2000. The game is a survival horror game, very much taking its cues from the Resident Evil series. And it basically takes the plot of Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust and sort of recontextualizes everything to be a survival horror mansion game taking place in the Gothic castle. It had a three different endings, one of which is basically the ending that's used in the film, and two that, like, one is, like, supposed to be, like, a good ending that's, like, a traditional happy ending, and one that's, like, a bad ending that's, like, super downer. It's kind of a really slow-moving game. It is survival horror in the traditional sense. I don't know that Vampire Hunter D was really the right franchise, the right property to turn into a slow-moving survival horror game.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, it's pleasant enough. Copies of the game, disc only, can be found for like $10. Now, proper like mint condition copies go for a little more money. But, you know, if you're listening to this show, you're probably not as worried about that. That's really for listeners of our other show. It's worth playing if you like late 90s, early 2000s survival horror. It's a pretty all right game. I don't regret playing it.
Yeah, that doesn't really sound like a genre. I'd want, like, a action game, you know?
Yeah. So both of the Vampire Hunter D movies recently got sparkly, pristine, fantastic Blu-ray releases.
Yeah.
The first film in particular got an amazing restoration. The way the encode is, like, the colors really pop and snap. It is just, it looks beautiful. So, as far as I know, neither of these movies are available legally for streaming, but, you know, you can check out Amazon for Blu-rays or DVDs if you'd like to watch it. either of them. They're both quite good, and we here at AnimeBooey.org.
AnimeBooey.org.
Give our suggestion that if you're only going to watch one, you watch Bloodlust.
Yes.
Sayid, do you have anything else to say about Vampire Hunter D?
No, just that I'm excited that they're going to be putting out a CG animated show that's currently in development.
Yeah. That will probably be something that doesn't really exist until 2017, but it's definitely something I'm looking forward to.
And my understanding is that they're looking for, again, Western involvement in, like, HBO or Showtime or something like that, airing it and having it be, like, an hour-long sort of drama.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how those talks go.
Indeed.
All right, well, with all that having been said, let's talk a little bit about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, I have been watching, we just entered a new season, so there's a bunch of new anime series starting. I've been watching a ton of them, but the only one that's really popped out so far for me has been One Punch Man. One Punch Man is an adaptation of the very popular Shonen Jump series of the same name, and it's very much a critique on the current state of shonen anime and manga. Very much a look at, like, you have these characters that are powering up endlessly. In a real world setting, what does that mean, both to the characters and to the power balance of the world? The premise is super interesting. The animation quality is effing gorgeous, like some of the best work Madhouse has done in years, which is saying something.
Nice.
It is just a really beautiful TV series. It's a TV series that looks better than most movies. So, absolutely worth watching. It's streaming on Viz's Neon Alley service, and it's streaming on Hulu. So,
oh, good.
This is definitely easily accessible. The third episode just aired yesterday, and it's absolutely worth watching. Absolutely. Slaggy, what about you? What have you been watching?
I actually recently started watching Attack on Titan. You might remember last time I'm like, oh, I like to watch something, during dinner or something, just put on some anime. So, Attack on Titan is not exactly that type of anime, but, I can definitely already, I'm only a couple episodes in, but I can definitely already see why it's so widely adored. I mean, it's very, very intense, speaking of, bloody and intense, just that first episode.
Oh, absolutely. It hits the ground running. It does slow down a little bit, but overall, I think it's a fantastic show. I can't wait for you to get a little deeper so we can talk about it.
Yeah, and the Titans, of course, are super creepy, giant naked men, which I don't mean that in, like, a way. I'm just like, ew, they're creepy, ew.
All right, is there anything else you've been watching?
No, not yet.
I know we've both been keeping a pace of Dragon Ball Super.
Oh, yes, of course.
And that's going pretty well. How are you feeling about that?
I can't believe that we're living in a time where we're getting a new Dragon Ball TV show.
It's good.
And it makes GT not canon.
Yeah.
Like, as a Dragon Ball fan, whoever would have thought that would have come. So, thank you, based Toriyama.
Maybe for April Fools we'll do an episode on Dragon Ball GT.
Oh, no! It's not even funny.
All right, well, with that then, let's kick over to these social links.
Yeah, thank you for your great feedback. We've got a couple of tweets and Facebook comments to read. And so I'm going to start over on the Twitters.
Twiddly, twiddly, tweet, twiddly, twiddly, tweet.
Our first tweet comes from Your Enzyme, who had said a couple weeks ago, AnimeBooey.org and GameBooey.org. It's a 2-for-1 Monday. And then little celebration emojis. Celebrate, like the little party popper things, Is that what they're called? Poppers?
I don't think that's what those are.
Braun Dwarf says, the opening theme song is the best ever. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Crystal Y. Diaz, Game Buoy superfan, and hopefully an Anime Buoy superfan as well, says, Tokyo Godfathers sounds a lot like the Three Godfathers with John Wayne. # episode 1.
I'm not familiar with that movie, but I wouldn't be that surprised if they had similarities.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel like Japanese, back to samurai movies and anime, really love their westerns and such.
Oh, most definitely.
Also, another comment saying, calling Cowboy Bebop a noir hit home. It made all the sad parts flash through my mind. I felt a pain in my chest.
Aw. Sorry. Also, yeah.
But yeah. And I think this was in context of the Cowboy Bebop game, saying, if you get that import, let me know. I've wanted to see actual gameplay since I first heard about it.
Bebop or Lane? Because we talked about games for both of those.
It's unfortunately, I'm not sure of the context of it.
Well, I guess I'll just have to buy both.
And speaking of Lane, Bystander Bear says, great episode about Lane. I have the Lunchbox DVD set too, and it's one of my faves. Have to get the BF back into it, wink.
Yes!
Get that BF back into it.
Stop objectifying our listeners.
I did not mean that like that. I just meant I love Serial Experiments Lane. And also, with Serial Experiments Lane, Daniel T. over on Facebook said, I instantly bought Boa's album from iTunes after listening to this episode. All of my teenage feelings are returning. For anyone curious, the show is also streaming on Hulu. All episodes subbed, first two are available dubbed.
That's awesome, yeah. And I'm super happy you shared that. I didn't know.
Yeah, so that is great news. So thank you for all your great feedback. We're loving that people are having anime thoughts. And if you'd like to share your experiences with the D, Vampire Hunter D, that is, or Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust, or if you've like read any of the other novels or whatever, just anything.
Yeah, I am totally down to chop it up about those novels. I actually think they're super good, but I literally don't know anyone else who's read them.
Yeah, so hit us up about the D, Vampire Hunter D.
You tried. So, you know, with all that having been said, I think it's time to start up winding down. Slaggy, you want to do our solicitations?
Yes, we love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We appreciate your patronage on Stitcher. I almost called it Twitcher. Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
You can email us at mailbuoy@animebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@animebuoy.org.
Secret spoiler, it also goes to the same place that mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org goes to. And everything, right now, you know, we're just starting off this show, but all four of these episodes are available on animebuoy.org.
Animebuoy.org.
Which will, you know, continue to grow over the years, one would hope.
Well, that's certainly the goal.
Captain Spike, how about a few little shout-outs?
All right, well, if you've enjoyed what we've done here, and hopefully you have, I would recommend you check out our main show over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
That is the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. As well as that, I'd recommend you check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, as well as Tables, Ladder, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, take us somewhere.
Well, if you are a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race and like hearing me and Captain Spike, but you want us a little bit cattier, if that's even possible, well, it is possible because we podcast about RuPaul's Drag Race on Reading is Fundamental, where we serve tea and dish on everything Drag Race, hunty, where we're joined by Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from the Video Game Realness podcast. And speaking of video game podcasts, if you are into gaming podcasts, please go over and listen to GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where we shout out a bunch of fantastic gaming podcasts that are our hunty bunch and, you know, part of the family. What up, fam?
All right. Well, with all that having been said, hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us as much as we've enjoyed talking. This has been a very lovely Sunday afternoon. But until next time, keep watching, keep thinking, and Yoru no Kaido nite. Na 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 na.